broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, Michigan. The following program is pre-recorded at a different time and brought to you by the station, and we hope you enjoy it.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Ray Hernandez. Ray is one of the four co-founders of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation. Stands for the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Encounters. Ray graduated with honors from Rutgers University and was a master candidate at Cornell University and was a PhD candidate at UC Berkeley, where he was the recipient of a National Science Foundation PhD Fellowship. He previously was an adjunct professor for 6 years at the New School for Social Research and at the City University of New York. Ray has published several peer-reviewed academic articles on consciousness and the Free Experience Research Study. Was a co-editor and was a co-editor of an 820-page book titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. Ray is also the co-producer of a science-based documentary with the same title. And Ray, he has lectured all over the world on the relationship between consciousness and contact with non-human intelligence via the contact modalities. He is presently associated with a new organization, Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, or CCRI. Ray is currently an attorney and resides in Miami, Florida with his family. He was on this show back in October of 2014, and we're honored to have him back with us today. So, hello, Ray.
Hello, David. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, you've got quite a bit to introduce. I wasn't able to get everything in, but suffice it to say, you know your stuff.
Thank you.
So anyway, are you still associated with the Free organization?
Well, the Free Foundation transitioned into this new organization. This new organization now has 20 PhD academics and five medical doctors and about 10 researchers non-academic researchers.
Okay.
So it's an evolution of the work that we had done with the Free Foundation, and most of the academics transitioned to this new organization.
Okay. So is it basically still the FREE Foundation?
Okay. Now it's a new name.
So is it that consciousness? Is it that foundation under a new name? Is what I'm asking.
It's a totally different foundation.
Okay.
It's a 501c3 academic research institute, and the name of it is Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, otherwise known as CCRI.
Okay. So tell us about CCRI.
Okay. In order for me to start about CCRI, let me tell you very, very little about the Free Foundation and some of our what we did over now a 7-year period.
Okay.
And then how it evolved into the CCRI Foundation.
Sounds good.
All of the 20 academics that we have in our organization, the CCRI Foundation, and almost all of the individuals involved with the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation, including the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell, we all hypothesized what is commonly known as that consciousness is primary. That means the nature of our reality is an illusion. It's not just a 3D physical reality. And we're talking, you know, PhD physicists, PhD astrophysicists, numerous very, very well-named, very well-known names, and I could give you some, but I don't know if your listeners want me to go through a list of all these PhDs. even you've heard of George Knapp, right?
Oh, yeah, out in Las Vegas.
Okay, well, George Knapp even told us in an interview that, in his opinion, that consciousness is primary, okay, not our 3D reality. And he also believes, just like our organization, that all of what we're calling the contact modalities, which will be explained at a later date, is all interrelated because all of them involve a manipulation of space-time. And just focusing on what is commonly known as ufology doesn't get at to the root cause of the UFO phenomenon. So for George Knapp, it's much, much more complicated, and that if we're still stuck in viewing it as a nuts and bolts phenomenon, we're not going to be getting what this phenomenon is all about.
Okay.
And the same perspective as Dr. Jacques Vallée. He's had the same visions, and also Alan Hynek in the last couple of years of his life had the same type of approach. And so some of the people in our organization, have you ever heard of Dr. Dean Radin?
No.
He is the lead scientist at the Institute for Noetic Sciences. And this is an organization that the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell founded in 1972. Mm-hmm. And that organization now is known all throughout the world as the leading academic research institute in the field of consciousness and ESP and parapsychology.
Mm-hmm.
So Dean Radin, together with Dr. Rudy Shields, who is an emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard University, a very close friend of the late Dr. John Mack, and also Dr. Mitchell, together with Dr. Claude Swanson, who is a PhD physicist from Princeton University, and I could go on with names and names and names, but you don't want to know, you know, particular names. But basically, all of these individuals, together with George Knapp, like I told you before, and all of these academics and these medical doctors, and some of them are graduates from Harvard and also Harvard Medical School, and have done postdoctoral research fellows in neuroscience and in psychiatry. So all of them speculated that consciousness is primary, and all of what we call the contact modalities, and then let me explain what that is. The contact modalities are all the different ways that humans are piercing the veil of our reality and having experiences with non-human intelligence, okay? Mm-hmm. For example, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, ghosts and spirits, UFOs, also known as UAPs, channeling, remote viewing, hallucinogenic journeys, orbs, electronic voice phenomenon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that all of these experiences, most of the mainstream researchers and investigators are viewing them as separate and distinct. For example, you go to a ufology conference and you talk about ghosts and spirits, and most of these major speakers would say that has nothing to do with UFOs.
Yeah,
you tell them about near-death experiences, they'll say the same, it has nothing to do with UFOs. Well, what we found out in our five-year academic research study of over 4,200 individuals that have both seen a UFO and have had contact with non-human intelligence, okay, that the vast majority of them have had numerous paranormal experiences. And I could go over statistics if you like, but let me just give you the broad summary at this point. For example, 80% of them have had what is commonly called an out-of-body experience.
Okay.
50% of them were brought to another reality, what we have coined a matrix reality. In terms of people that have seen orbs, not in photos, but physical orbs, as close to 60%. 65% of them have seen a deceased entity, commonly known as to some people as a ghost or a spirit, and communicated with that entity. So these are huge numbers. We asked over 100 paranormal related questions, and we're talking about numerous people answered yes to various types of paranormal experiences.
Was this was this just a cross section of the general public, or are we talking about PhDs?
I went into over 200 radio interviews.
Okay.
I announced our survey in your show. Okay.
Okay.
I also went into there were two different radio shows that were MUFON radio shows numerous times.
Right. I remember that.
I also went on was it KGRA radio. And I interviewed with like maybe 8 or 9 of those different hosts multiple times. Plus, we had people like Kathleen Martin. Every week she appears on a radio show.
Okay.
She announced our surveys. Barbara Lamb, even Whitley Strieber. We were on his radio shows numerous times. We appeared on Coast to Coast 2 times. And we announced people to take our surveys. And plus, we had a mailing list of over 5,000 names of people that had written books on UFOs.
Right.
And so most of the people that are interested in these topics, they found out about our surveys. Okay. So what we wound up over a five-year period was with 4,200 responses from individuals from over 100 countries.
Wow.
Now, we had 3 different surveys. The first survey was 100 questions, and we had, that's where the 4,200 people came in. Our second survey was an additional 500 questions, and again, we had, I forgot the exact number, but it was close to 3,000 people that took our second surveys.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have to have done the first survey in order to do the second survey.
Okay.
And then our third survey was qualitative. We had 70 questions, and they had to write out written responses. Not write out, but type it into the computer in a program that we use called SurveyMonkey. So, and so we got over 1,350 people that wrote out very detailed responses to these 70 questions.
Mm.
And we've received more than 10,000 pages of writing to the Phase 3. So no one has ever done this before. Are you aware of any type of statistical data collection on UFO contact experiencers?
Me particularly, no.
Yes.
No, other than yours. Other than yours. So it would seem that by your survey that most people, although they don't say so right out loud or tell their neighbors or their coworkers. They don't publicly announce this, but at least a goodly percentage of let's say Americans, if not worldwide, have had one or more what we would consider paranormal experiences, be it spiritual or UFO, whatever.
Yeah, no one has ever done that type of research in terms of, you know, these massive surveys that get spread around the world. No one has ever done that.
No.
But we could hypothesize, for example.
Right.
I talk to almost everybody, even members of my wife's church. I've talked to almost everybody that we know. And what I discovered was that there were 9 individuals that have had near-death experiences. Okay, there were, goodness, almost 15 people that have had out-of-body experiences. There is a deacon in our church, a deacon now, okay, that has had consistent out-of-body experiences. There's a man who led the Thursday group prayer meetings that I used to have to attend religiously. If not, there was no food for the rest of the week, okay? and so here's this man. He only told a few people of his near-death experience, okay? Mm-hmm. He had gone to the Monsignor. The Monsignor said, keep your mouth shut because the church doesn't believe in that.
There you go.
And so my neighbor, 2 houses down, this woman has had a whole boatload of experiences, okay? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have known until I opened up my mouth and told about what happened to us and my wife and my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so she's had a near-death experiences, several out-of-body experiences. She's seen multiple UFOs. She's been on a UFO with her her 2 children and her father. Okay.
Your wife?
No. This is the neighbor.
The neighbors.
Down.
Okay. Wow.
So, this lady in the supermarket, for example, there was the Inquirer, National Inquirer. They had a cover of a UFO or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I looked at her. And I said, do you believe that? Look at that. They got UFOs on the front cover, right? So she turns around, she says, I believe in them. Not only I believe in them, but I saw one. And then she goes and describes her UFO experience here in Miami, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken with tons of people here in Miami that have seen UFOs. So what I suspect is that it's extremely common. But just like the majority of people that took our surveys, most of these people have never spoken to anyone else.
Yeah, that's what I'm at.
Yeah, except to a spouse or to their children or to a parent.
Right.
But that's it, because of the fear and ridicule.
So that's how they've been keeping the secret for so long, right in plain sight, right?
Correct. Now, here's a couple of things that we discovered from our research study. First of all, it took us 9 months to develop the methodology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the person that supervised that methodology was Dr. John Klimo. And he was a retired professor of psychology, and he taught research methodology for over 40 years.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're talking about an expert that was the head of designing this.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, we had a whole bunch of other retired PhD academics. One of them, as a matter of fact, was Dr. Bob Davis, who's a retired professor of neuroscience, a professor of the brain, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he got interested because... right before he was about to retire, a few months before he was about to retire, he and his wife took a vacation out to Sedona. And then out in the desert of Sedona, they both saw these 2 UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got him crazy interested in the topic. Mm-hmm. And he did a whole lot of research, and he wound up writing a book titled UFOs, Should We Believe? And his conclusion was that based upon the research that he did, that unequivocally, UFOs do exist, you know, that
What is his name? What is his name again?
Bob Davis, D-A-V-I-S.
I'm not sure, but I think I'm pretty sure that I have had him on this show.
I recommended him to you years ago.
Yeah, okay,
correct, because I said, look, Mr. Twitchell is a professor here, part of our group that you need to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened later on is he had an experience that was related to post-death, you know. And so he wrote a book about the afterlife. and near-death experiences. It was basically, should we believe all of this? And so he did like a review of all the literature that's been written on it, and he concluded that, yes, you know, there's so much documentation that was done by medical doctors and academics on this phenomenon, and it really is, it's very real, just like UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
And then his last book was a book that he published last year, and it was based, a lot of it was based upon our research study. And that was that many of these experiencers were having experiences of being brought to other realities, okay? And so he wrote a book about consciousness and contact experiences and people changing as a result of all of this.
Right.
So, I mean, just to let you know the level of people that we had in our organization.
Okay.
And then besides the academics, we also had people like Mary Rodwell, Kathleen Martin, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, Barbara Lamb. You know, these are four out of the top, you know, researchers that I've been researching UFO experiencers for, you know, for Leo's case since the early 60s. And so all of us developed all these questions to ask. And so I told everyone in the very beginning, I said, look, put all of your previous hypotheses, theories, conceptions out the door. Okay, we're going to start from scratch, okay? We're not going to approach this with any preconceived notions, and that's how we did it. And we came up with four major findings. So do I have time to tell you some of these four major findings?
I want to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with researcher Ray Hernandez. And, go ahead then, Ray.
Yeah, first of all, I want to tell your listeners that we are giving away several of our chapters from our book. What we did is we published an 820-page book based upon our five-year academic research study.
Mm-hmm.
And we're giving away chapter one, which is 120 pages. So this is not some two or three-page abstract here. We're giving you 120 pages of data.
Mm-hmm.
From the first chapter of our book. Our book is titled Beyond UFOs. Why Beyond UFOs? Because what we discover is that these experiences that people are having go way beyond materialist ufology.
Okay.
Okay? So the title of the book is Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in order for me to send you that chapter one and several other chapters from our book, you need to send us an email. And our email is info, I-N-F-O, at experiencer.org. So that's info at experiencer.org. And I think I sent you chapter one, David.
You did.
I hope you eventually get a chance to read some of the,
I have read,
the data in there.
I have read some of it. I mean, some of it is technical, and I understand that, but a lot of it is really eye-opening. You take,
correct.
You pretty much make a case for glumping all the all what we consider paranormal, what most people consider paranormal. And unfortunately, they consider UFOs paranormal as well. But that's all glumped together, and it's all one thing. It's, there's all that connectivity. Am I right?
Correct. That's what we discovered. But our intention was just to focus on people that have seen UFOs.
Okay.
And have had some type of contact with a non-human intelligence. That was our focus.
Okay.
One question that we wanted to ask. Okay, well, all of the researchers, okay, they had their own hypotheses. Why? Because Leo has spoken to, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. Kathy Martin has been working on with experiencers, talking to them, researching them, and has published three books with the late Stan Friedman, you know.
Right.
So Barbara Lamb, obviously, and Mary Rodwell, one of our co-founders. So these are people that had many, many years of working with experiencers, but just like Dr. John Mack, okay? Now, what they did not have data,
okay?
You just had, I spoke with, you know, 1,000 people. I spoke with 2,000 people, okay? Dr. John Mack stated that at most, just like David Jacobs, he has only worked with, and also the other guy out of New York City that did a lot of hypnotic regressions.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, Bud Hopkins.
Bud Hopkins, okay. The three of them, in all of their interviews, stated that at most, they work with approximately 200 people. That's it, 200 people. And again, Dr. Max said that at most, these people remember maybe a fourth of their experiences. The other three-fourths of their experiences, he was able to retrieve via hypnotic regression,
right,
which is still, you know, a problematic tool because there's numerous problems preconditioned notions of the researchers, leading questions. Someone might have read for the last 20 years all of Bud Hopkins' books, all of David Jacobs' books, and goes for hypnotic regression, and that's what they have in their mind, you know, from the reading of their books.
Right.
So they're highly influenced. So that's not a very good process. What we did is we eliminated that problem, okay? Also, when you talk to experiences, David, I realized a very long time ago, once I began having these experiences and once week I started and people starting to call me, someone would be on talking to you for like the 2 hours. And it wasn't at the end of the 2 hours that you find out that that particular experience came from a lucid dream. That experience came through a hypnotic regression. That other experience came through a channeling. And only a small part of what they just told you came through a conscious, explicit memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is in our survey, we instructed people to respond based only upon conscious, explicit memory, not upon hypnotic regression, not upon a lucid dream, not upon channeling, etc. Only conscious, explicit memories. And that's for the quantitative aspect, our two surveys. Now, for the third phase, which is the qualitative aspect, where they asked to write out responses to 70 questions, we allowed for all these other types of memory recollections, okay? But they had to state, this particular experience came from a channeling. This particular experience came from a lucid dream. This experience came from a hypnotic regression session that I had. So that's how we incorporated that. But again, it wasn't in the quantitative part. It was in the qualitative part, okay?
Right.
Now, so we wanted to ask out, one of the major questions was whether these experiences were positive, negative, or neutral, okay? Now, as most of the academics in the group knew, depending how you phrase a question, you'll get a different response, okay?
Yeah.
So we asked that question in more than 25 different ways, okay? we even asked it for the different types of beings. One of the questions was we identified 12 different types of beings. For example, the short grays, the tall grays, the human-looking beings, the energy beings, the mantids, you know, the reptilians, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Down the line, all these different types of beings that people are, have physically seen, reported in ufology.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So for all those types of beings, we asked that question, was your experience with that particular being mainly negative, slightly negative, neutral, slightly positive, or mainly positive? Okay? So that was just one out of the 25 questions. And what we discovered was that, for example, for most of these types of beings, they were not negative. Okay? Even the small grays. If you go to the internet, you would think that these experiences were the most horrible experiences in their lives. No, only 10.5% said that they were negative experiences. That's it. 10.5%.
And that's how they viewed it, right?
Let me get to that. That's
okay.
Them answering the question now, okay?
All right.
When it first started, it might have been a higher, much higher level of negativity, and I'll address that in a second, okay?
Okay.
But this is them answering the question now, okay? 60% of these people with these short gray experiences said that it was actually neutral, okay? That it didn't do me any harm and didn't do me any good, you know? It was just a neutral experience, you know?
Okay.
And, but that was many years for most of them when they answered these surveys, okay?
Okay.
For the human-looking being, it was much more positive. obviously because it didn't scare them. It looked like a human, you know?
Right, right.
Now, we discovered the number one type of being that people saw was an energy being. It wasn't a small grace, the energy beings. Mm-hmm. That was at 55%. The human-looking beings were at 52%.
Okay.
The short grays were at 51%. The ghosts and spirits were at 47%. Okay? Mm. So, again, if you go to these internet sites and these so-called ufology experts out there, these speakers at these ufology conferences, they're totally clueless about this. Why? Because they don't have the data. They're not researchers of UFO contact, okay? They're more into the nuts and bolts ufology aspects of it, okay?
Okay.
Which, in my opinion, has contributed very little over the last 80 years compared to this five-page survey that we did. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and we'll address that later. Now, what we discovered was that initially 37% of these individuals viewed their experiences as highly negative. Okay? And what we discovered that most of these people, it was what Dr. John Mack called the ontological shock of the experience.
Okay.
For example, you and your wife are in your bed, right? You're sound asleep. All of a sudden, you hear some walking around your bedroom. You know, you wake up, your wife wakes up, and you see these little three gray beings on your bed, okay?
Hmm.
You know, the most common people would be, you know, urinating in their bed.
Right,
you know, because
right,
of the,
right.
Because of the shock of it, okay? So, but for 37% of these people that said, yes, it was a highly negative experience, okay? And the most negative were the people that had an abduction type of experience, where they were paralyzed, they were on a slab or a bed,
okay.
And they were having mainly the little gray bees doing like a medical checkup on them, okay?
Yeah.
And so, but what we discovered was that over time, most of these individuals, the vast majority of them, had more than one experience. Actually, over 40% of them had more than 20 experiences. Okay?
Mm.
Now, what we discovered was the more experiences you had, the more positive was what these people wrote down. Okay?
Okay.
So, for example, even the another factor, again, which ufology is totally clueless about. You go to these UFO conferences and you talk to some of these so-called experts, okay?
Mm.
They think that this whole phenomenon of contact involves abductions, only abductions, okay? Well, what did we discover? Only one-third of the people. Now, we're talking 4,200 people now. We're not talking about the 200 people that David Jacobs writes about, okay?
Mm, yeah.
The 4,200 people. So only one-third of these people had what is typically called an abduction. Okay. However, when they took their survey, 70% of these abductees do not call themselves abductees. They call themselves contactees.
Okay.
Why? Why? Because the type of experience that they had changed over time. It became much more positive. For many of the people, the most traumatized people, it started off, let's say, for example, with a medical inspection, with these little grays, you know, checking them over with a light on them, you know, and they were paralyzed, that type of thing. Well, the third time, all of a sudden, they're on a UFO ship. They have remembrances of it. They remember that they're walking around. They're giving a tour of the craft. And by their eighth experience, whatever, they're interacting with human-looking beings, and they're saying, Alberto, I know that you've been thinking of death lately, okay? You know, Alberto's in his early 70s, and he says, let me tell you, do not fear death, okay?
Mm.
And then gives Alberto a near-death experience, okay? Alberto doesn't die. So he's watching TV. He's watching the honeymooners on TV, you know?
Okay.
And all of a sudden, boom, he's another reality where this human-looking being with a white monk's robe is bringing him to some other reality and giving him lessons, okay?
Mm.
But when Alberto first started, he was paralyzed. He was scared, you know? And they were, you know, on top of him, you know, checking him over physically, having these physical type of experiments or medical checkups, that sort of thing. Same thing like Reverend Michael Carter, okay? Same thing like Whitley Strieber, okay? All of these three people in the very beginning viewed it as highly negative. Whitley Strieber, you interview him now, he's Mr. Love and Light. Mr. Love and Light.
Yeah.
He's talking to his deceased wife. He's seen ghosts and spirits. He's having spiritual lessons. And this is what we saw in our survey, okay? This gradual evolution, okay? Mm-hmm. But again, these so-called, you know, materialist ufologists, they wouldn't know about this thing because many of them don't even believe in anything paranormal.
Right.
They just, they want to see a photo of a UFO. They want to see a little lump that fell down. Let's analyze that lump and see what it can tell us, you know. Let's analyze this new photo that came out of that TikTok group, you know. So my perspective is, you know, what has that approach given us in 80 years? My response, very little, okay? Now, we also asked that question of whether it was positive, negative, or neutral in many, many different ways. For example, we asked them the question, if you could stop your contact experiences right now, would you? Okay?
Mm.
Well, what did we find out? You know, 86% of the people said, no. Keep it coming, baby. Keep it coming. Okay?
All right,
so,
yeah.
And then when we asked people of a fixed choice question, you know, if you had to choose between positive or negative, nothing neutral, if you had to make a choice, a forced choice, what would you pick? 96% said positive.
Okay.
And so, again, the important stuff to come out of here was that abductions were only one-third of the people. That's it. Of the people that were abductees, 70% of them now call themselves contactees and not abductees. Why? Because the vast majority of these people had subsequent experiences, and their experiences changed over time. Okay,
right.
The people that you find out are the most traumatized are the people that only had a few types of abduction-related type of experiences. Okay, the other thing is that we found out that the vast majority of the people, we're talking about 40% had more than 20 contact experiences.
Okay,
40%. An additional 20% had between 10 or 20. So that means right there, 60% of the people are having more than 10 experiences, contact experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So what we found out was the more you had, the more positive it became.
Okay. So they start out as abductees when they first they don't know what's going on. And then they say, ooh, they're experiencers because they're part of a bigger thing than them themselves and their own world. And now they're contactees.
Yeah, they're starting to interact with other types of beings. In many of the cases, are the small grays.
Right.
They appear to be like the little first team unit, you know, that goes out there, and they're doing these types of medical experiments, that sort of thing.
Right.
And one thing that we find out that, again, mainstream ufology is totally clueless about, okay?
Mm.
But if you talk to Mary Rodwell, you talk to Kathy Martin, Barbara Lamb, Leo Sprinkle, who have been working with experiencers for numerous, numerous years, you know that medical healings are existing, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was never fully documented. For example, Preston Dennett wrote a book more than 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, titled UFO Healings. Okay.
Okay.
I think he had close to more than 200 cases of UFO related type of healings. Okay. But nobody bought that book. Nobody paid attention to it. Okay. Everybody bought, you know, Bud Hopkins books or David Jacobs books that the hybrids are taking over the world. You know, that's what people bought.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you go to these conferences and you hear mainly David Jacobs talk or Bud Hopkins and not Preston Dennett, okay, you get a totally different perspective of what is this reality. But the point is that no one has ever done a comprehensive worldwide academic research study of UFO contact experiencers.
Right.
Okay? Or abductees, no matter whatever you want to call it. But I don't use that word abductees because only a third of them have had an abduction. Okay?
Right.
And now 70% of the abductees don't even call themselves abductees. So I prefer the more neutral term experiencer.
Okay.
Now, what we did is we knew that healing was going on, but we had no idea of what percent of these people are having these healings, okay?
Mm.
So we asked that question, have you had a UFO-related healing on either you or a member of your family, okay? Well, what happened? 50% of the people, half the people said yes, okay? So in one of the chapters in our book, Chapter 6, we had a whole chapter dedicated just to medical healings, okay? And we had 12 case studies. The first one right off the bat was another medical doctor. This is a doctor saying that, look, I had an experience with these short grays. I had passed out. I was bleeding to death. I was in shock. And then I found myself paralyzed on some type of bed. And had these little grays around me, and they had this big intensive light on me. And I heard this noise, you know, and then he was knocked out. And when he knew it, he was wide awake. He had zero pain on it and zero bleeding. He was like totally healed, right? And there was another man who's a retired federal DEA agent. His wife is a PhD psychologist. His daughter's a PhD psychologist, okay? He's had two different medical healings, okay? And one was that he had a torn retina in his eye. He was going to lose his eyesight because he tore it right before he went on this cruise to Alaska with his wife. And he said, hey, $10,000 for this cruise for my wife. I ain't losing it, right?
Yeah.
And the day before, he had helped this elderly lady who was falling down, and he hit his eyeball on a jagged edge of a table.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Now, he didn't go to the doctor or anything like that. He just, oh, it's probably a little bump, you know. He covered his eye and stuff like that. So the next day, he's on the boat trip, and his eye is, like, swollen, almost is shut, you know. Mm-hmm. So he goes to a doctor, you know, these big, gigantic, you know, cruise liners, they have
right.
a doctor on board.
Right.
And the doctor, you know, checks them with a special instrument for the eyes and lights and stuff. And he says, your whole retina is almost completely torn off.
Oh.
It's done some internal damage. I'm going to fly you right now on a medevac because you need to go to the hospital. They need to operate it so you don't lose your eye.
Hmm.
And he was like, I ain't losing this, my cruise here, you know, with my wife. She's going to have to fly back with me.
Hmm.
And I'll wait till I get back. You know, so it was like seven days they got back. He goes to an ophthalmologist that's right at the corner of his where his wife worked. His wife is has her own clinic as a psychologist, right?
Mm.
And the man's a medical doctor, ophthalmologist. He checks his eye, and he says, "Oh my God, Alberto, you hardly have no cornea at all. It's so shriveled up; it's almost all torn out.
Oh,
there's
my.
Internal damage inside. I need to schedule for an operation." You know, and they schedule, you know, like the next day or something like that, or the day after, right?
Yeah.
So then that same night when Alberto was in bed, he found himself paralyzed on a gurney with these little grays around him and with an intense light right on him. And he saw like a green light beam. And then his eyes were closed and he couldn't move. He couldn't see anything because the intense light was all around him. And he remember hearing a noise like, right. The next day, he had 20/20 vision.
Wow.
Okay.
And didn't need the operation. Didn't need the operation at all.
He didn't need it. He had like a triangle cut in both eyes.
Okay.
And then he had 20/20 vision in both eyes. He went to the ophthalmologist to let him know that, look, I got this perfect vision now. And so he went in emergency to the ophthalmologist. The ophthalmologist saw him, expecting that the following day they would have the surgery done, And the doctor says, unbelievable. I can't explain what happened to him. And another anomaly that I saw in your eyes, you've got a perfect triangle cut into, you know, your eyeball. And your cornea is perfectly healed. He said, what happened? Did you go to another doctor? Did you have any type of surgery? I mean, what went on here? He couldn't explain it. And so Alberto said, no, I don't know. I just woke up like that, you know, because
oh, wow.
He didn't want to tell him.
He didn't want to tell him, yeah.
Yeah. So we had, I don't know if you know who Dr. Joseph Burks is. He's a retired medical doctor. He's also a major experiencer.
Okay.
He's a retired emergency room physician. So I had Dr. Joseph Burks together with Preston Dennett, who 25 years ago had written that chapter on UFO medical healings. Okay.
Mm.
I gave him all of the data of like, you know, close to 1,000 people that had these UFO types of medical healings. And I said, look, try to pick out some of the best cases, okay? And let me know which ones, and I'll try to reach out to them to see if they'd be willing to be interviewed by you and to give you their medical records. So we had 12 of these people that gave them their medical records, and Dr. Joseph Burks and Preston Dennett interviewed them, okay? One was a man that was in one day was cured of stage 4 cancer, okay?
Wow.
He had a video of an orb at night because he knew that he was having all of these paranormal experiences and orb experiences.
Okay. Yeah. So he put the camera in the bedroom, did he?
He put the camera in the bedroom, okay?
Yeah.
And then he he captured an orb going into his body that night.
Wow.
And the next day, it was like a white orb. And the video is I'll have to reach out to him if you want to see it yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But the next day or the following day, I forgot, he had gone to the doctor's office. And you know how they're monitoring, you know, cancer, how it spreads through the blood work and things of that sort.
Oh, yeah.
And they discovered that he was totally cancer-free.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Where do I get a doctor like this? Give me a script,
well,
a referral.
In the reason why I asked this question, let me tell you, was because my very first experience on March the 4th, 2012, involved a miraculous medical healing of our 15-year-old Jack Russell Terrier.
Okay.
Who was going to be euthanized later that afternoon.
Okay.
I remember in 2014 I told that story to your audience members.
Yes.
Here I was, you know, someone that had gone to all these, you know, prestigious universities. I was now an attorney with the U.S. Department of Treasury for over 20 years, and I was a total non-believer because I didn't know of any of these things,
right,
you know?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, my wife disappears in front of me, the dog disappears in front of me, there's an energy being in my living room, and that energy being totally takes over my consciousness.
Hmm.
And I didn't care that my wife disappeared, that the dog disappeared. I looked at it, and I waved my hand at it, and I said, got me up for this, you know? And this is at 6 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah.
So then I turned around, and I walked back up the stairs. I immediately was put to sleep. And then 45 minutes when I woke up, now I was fully conscious. And I was like, what the, you know what? And I ran down the stairs, and my wife materializes again in the middle of the living room, and our dog, who was totally paralyzed from a stroke that we were going to be euthanizing later this afternoon,
mm-hmm.
was now running around our living room like a teenager.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And then my wife, like a couple of months later, saw a big, gigantic UAP, okay, right outside our house. And then 2 months later, she spent the whole month in Mexico, and she would be praying to see her angels, because she thought that was an angel, what she saw in the living room.
Mm.
So she's praying and praying, and what shows up, like 50 minutes later? A UFO.
Okay.
A big, gigantic
UFO. Yeah.
So, I mean, she was doing CE5 before she had no idea what the hell this was, you know? And they were appearing to her, you know, and twice with her family members present. And so, and I also did my own, you know, calling. I had no idea what a CE5 was, you know, but I tried to do what my wife did on my own. And 15 minutes later, this small football stadium-sized craft appears right on top of my next-door neighbor's house. Like, the bottom of this object was like 5 feet from his roof, okay?
Okay.
It went up like 100 meters and 600 meters back. My daughter witnessed it. There were three additional friends. All of us had cell phones except for my daughter. No one took a video of it, but it was like 30 feet away from us. It was this huge object putting on a light show for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so that's why I knew that the medical healing aspect of this phenomenon is a valid phenomenon, because it happened to me and
right,
my family.
Right.
And then when I was on the internet, I found out Preston Dennis' book, that he had written this book 25 years ago that no one paid attention to. So I said, let's ask this on the questionnaire. Okay, so so that's one of the questions that we found out, was that for the vast majority of these people, their experiences were seen as highly positive. Let me talk about the reptilians. Okay,
hold on a second. I wanted to ask you a question before we run out of time. We had Cheryl Costa on the show a couple months ago, and she said she. I don't know where she was, where you two were, but you were having this conversation that people would walk up and listen in, and you would both go back to your conversation, I assume, on spirituality and the contact modalities. Do you recall that?
Yes, yes, I vividly recall it, yes.
Okay, so she said while on the show, because we got off on the connection between spirituality and all that paranormal stuff with UFOs. At any rate, she said that out-of-body experiences, which I've had a couple, you're not really out of your body. If your soul leaves your body, she said, you're dead. So it's the mind transferring, like I guess radio waves, that transfer elsewhere. Where do you stand on that out-of-body experience?
Well, I mean, that's her own particular thesis, hypothesis to it all. Okay. We have people in our organization, Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, that have been studying remote viewing, out-of-body experiences, astral travel for many, many, many years. For example, Stephen Schwartz, he's one of the inventors of remote viewing. Even before the Stanford Research Institute, he was talking about, you know, what now is known as remote viewing. We still don't understand these phenomena, what might explain it. And anybody that gives you a concrete explanation, like they have the answer, to me, I run away. I run away because no one has the answers to these things. Because, you ask Jack Vallée, okay, who's been studying the UFO contact phenomenon for now close to 60 years. So you ask Dr. Vallée, you know, what the hell is going on, Jack, you know? And what he will tell you is, I haven't the faintest idea, but what I do know is that these experiences involve a manipulation of space-time, okay? And same thing with Dean Radin, with Dr. Gary Schwartz, who was a graduate of Harvard University, a PhD from Harvard, a tenured professor at Yale. He's studying mediumship, you know, now. Dr. John Klimo, who was a tenured professor of the paranormal, Edgar Mitchell, who started the Institute for Noetic Sciences, Dr. Rudy Shields, Dr. Bob Davis, a neuroscientist that's written 3 books on this phenomenon, all of them will tell you, just like George Knapp, what they speculate is that our reality is not what we think it is. Right. That our reality, that consciousness is actually primary, not our physical reality, and that we're having all of these types of paranormal contact experiences via the contact modalities, but we just have no idea what's behind all of this.
All right.
So that's my response to your question of OBEs.
So, in other words, everybody's got their own view on
hypothesis. It's a hypothesis.
Okay.
Yes, a hypothesis. I mean, Dean Radin, he's written 5 books on parapsychology. Mm-hmm. And ESP, mm-hmm. And all of those books, there's a title in there somewhere about consciousness, okay? Or one of the chapters that heavily talks about, you know, the aspect of consciousness. Okay. And he's part of our organization. And so, you know, you ask Dean, how, you know, can you categorize what is consciousness? And he goes, Ray, I'm totally freaking clueless as to what is consciousness, and everybody else is. And mm-hmm. say anybody that will give you a definitive answer of what it is, they're totally clueless as well.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Because no one knows.
Your guess is as good as mine,
yeah.
Right?
My perspective is that you're trying to understand like the mind of God, you know, which you can't.
That's what this show is all about, is to get different views, different viewpoint, different hypothesis from different researchers. And sometimes they don't correspond with each other, and the listener might say, well, "Wait a minute, Dave! You just had a guy on last month that said this was true, and now you got this guy saying that is true." Well, then do your own research and find decide out what is true.
That's what we did. Let me go into some of these other common themes, which are research findings that. No one really knows about unless they read our book.
Okay, we only got about 4 or 5 minutes, though.
Oh, my goodness, this is fast. Okay, one is that while these experiences are seen, the UFO contact phenomena, as mainly physical, in fact, it's the actual opposite. The vast majority, the overwhelming number, are not physical, and instead they're paranormal psychic. And that backs up the hypotheses of Jack Vallée, Alan Hynek, Dr. John Mack, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, these experiences result in a complete positive transformation of the experiencer in terms of their worldview and their psychological outlook. For example, they're more loving to each other. They're more ecological, less materialistic, more spiritual. They do not fear death. They have a purpose in life. They're more consciously aware. They're less religious, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. We asked 60 questions of how people initially viewed certain concepts, and how they view it now. And what you saw is basically people started off as a caterpillar, and then they finished as a butterfly.
Right. So that was
number three. Number fourth major finding is that these experiences, just like all of the other contact modalities, and in agreement with Jacques Vallée, and again, Alan Hynek, Edgar Mitchell, Dr. Claude Swanson, Dr. Dean Radin, Dr. John Mack, et cetera, et cetera. All of these experiences, especially the UFO contact experiences, involves a manipulation of space-time. And this, in turn, leads one to hypothesize that this non-human intelligence that we're interacting with might be multidimensional.
Okay.
And so that was one of the other major research findings that we came up with. So again, if people want more information, if they want to read a free copy of Chapter 1, which is 120 pages, and several of our other chapters, just send us an email to info@experiencer.org. info@experiencer.org, and we'll send you that information out.
Okay. Okay, the book is still available, isn't it, the whole book?
Yes, yes, it's on Amazon, 820 pages. We also have the Kindle version, if people don't want something that weighs almost 4 pounds in weight. And the Kindle version is a lot cheaper than the 820 pages. And also, we're going to be coming out with a new book, and I'll send you the graphic design of the front cover of our new book. Our new book is titled A Greater Reality. Okay, and we'll send that out to you as well, so you can get an understanding of what our new book looks like. At least the cover and the themes.
Greater reality, the new paradigm of consciousness, paranormal,
yes,
and
greater,
the contact with the.
Correct. A greater reality, the new paradigm of consciousness, the paranormal, and the contact modalities. And there's going to be three volumes. You're going to have three books of 820 pages written by both PhD academics and experiencers that are having not just UFOs, not just OBEs, not just NDEs, not just ghosts and spirits, but having the whole combination, the whole
shebang.
Soup, the whole gumbo soup, yeah.
So bottom line, whether it's UFO, nuts and bolts, UFO, abductions, contactees, ghosts, spirits, the whole thing is just one package, right?
It's one package because all of them involve a manipulation of space-time. And as we demonstrated in our five-year academic research study, people that have seen UFOs and have had contact with non-human intelligence, they're having the whole smorgasbord. Of experiences. And I'm quite sure that, for example, in your case, have you seen UFOs?
One. One for sure.
You mentioned you've had an out-of-body experience. Is that correct?
A couple of them, yep.
A couple of them, okay. Have you had any encounters with ghosts and spirits?
I have.
Okay, I mean, you're a typical person here. I mean, your history, your life is buttressing my perspective.
Right.
And not perspective of these pure materialists that just see everything as just pictures and videos. And, hey, let's analyze that rock, you know, that came off of that crap. Let's analyze that, you know. So my perspective is your experience is extremely valuable, but just looking at another video.
So it's just a matter of, I don't know where I was going with this.
The point is we need to document this.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do with this new research study of the CCRI. We're going to be studying the major experiencers of the contact modality.
Okay, once again, your email address.
info@experiencer.org.
info@experiencer.org. Good enough. Mr. Ray Hernandez, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Hope we can do this again. I know there's
Thank
more.
Thank you, David.
There's more to well, be talk about.
When our book comes out in, let's say, September,
yep.
Invite me back on your show, and I'll talk about the new book.
Sounds good to me. Have a good one. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. Stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Have you ever wanted to work in radio? Whether it be a hobby or maybe stepping stone to build your career? Henry Ford College has the right program for you. TCM 189 is an 8-week course that teaches the fundamentals of broadcasting and helps people become a better broadcaster. After completing the course, graduates will be eligible for a show right here on WHFR. For more information, go to hfcc.edu. There's only a few spots per semester, and seats fill up quickly. So log on to your web advisor today and reserve your place for TCM 189.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G. And we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Oh, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. Honey, oh, sugar, sugar, of loving.